You're listening to The Settlement Channel, featured exclusively on the Legal Broadcast Network. The Settlement Channel and these broadcasts are designed for structured settlement professionals, attorneys, claims professionals, and others involved or interested in the dynamic world of legal settlements, financial designs, and case strategy. Now here's your host, Mark Wahlstrom.
Hi, this is Mark Wahlstrom, and welcome to The Settlement Channel, a featured commentator on the Legal Broadcast Network. Well, we've got a special report today here on The Settlement Channel and a special guest. We're being joined by a nationally renowned tax counsel, attorney Robert Wood from San Francisco, California. Rob, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we've got some big news, and we'll kind of make sure just before we jump into it, we want everyone to know we'll have Rob's contact information in our frequent guest section, and his contact information is also right there on the front page of the Settlement Channel that you can click through and find his firm. But Rob, the D.C. Circuit, also known as the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, came out with a bombshell yesterday. Why don't you share with our listeners what happened?
I'd be happy to. And I'd say that description is exactly right. A bombshell, it really is. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit just this week has announced a decision that will have some far-reaching impact, I know. The case is called Murphy, Murphy versus Internal Revenue Service. And in it, a three-judge panel struck down as unconstitutional a portion of Section 104A2 of the Internal Revenue Code. And I can tell you as we go along a little more detail about what portion and exactly what the holding says.
Yeah. Well, I know I did a double take when I got your email. And really, to my mind, as someone who works in the settlement community, as you know, the very foundation of the tax policy that really undergirds the structured settlement community, but really most personal injury law is Section 104A2. And to me, this is a breathtaking ruling. I mean, it appears to literally shake decades of tax policy to the core by questioning the very definition of income. And the special carve-out that 104 has enjoyed. And that, to me, is what I thought was really astonishing. And if you could kind of walk our listeners through what Murphy was arguing, because it is I think it's an absolutely elegant argument, American to the core, if you will. And I am astonished by the scope of the ruling. So if you could kind of walk people through the type of case it was, what Murphy was arguing, and the grounds upon which they argued, because it was really a constitutional argument, wasn't it?
Yep, indeed. No, I think you're absolutely right. I think it is elegant. So basically, Murphy and a lot of the listeners, I'm sure, will recognize this as not an unusual factual setting. I mean, in some respects, it's a very garden variety case that a lot of lawyers, a lot of settlement professionals probably see, certainly a lot of plaintiff's lawyers see. Murphy alleged that her former employer, which was the New York Air National Guard, had blacklisted her and said bad things about her, provided unfavorable references and so on, after she complained that they were violating environmental restrictions. So it's a whistleblower case, fundamentally. So her claim was about blacklisting and that sort of thing. There was an administrative hearing, and she, before an administrative law judge, she, as part of that, submitted evidence of mental and physical injuries as a result of the blacklisting. She had a physician testify that she had somatic, S-O-M-A-T-I-C, somatic and emotional injuries. One of those injuries was bruxism, that is teeth grinding that's typically associated with stress, and that can cause permanent tooth damage. The ALJ, the administrative law judge, determined she had other physical manifestations of stress, including anxiety attacks, dizziness, shortness of breath, that sort of thing, and so recommended the administrative law judge recommended compensatory damages of $70,000, $45,000 of that for, and it was termed emotional distress or mental anguish, and $25,000 was for injury to reputation. So none, and it's significant, and I want to underscore that none of the award was for lost wages or lost earning capacity.
An important point.
Yeah, and so the way this goes in the case, and I'm belaboring it because I think the facts are real important.
Yeah.
So this is what the recommendation is. The Department of Labor Administrative Review Board, again, administrative, case isn't in court, they affirmed this recommendation, so Ms. Murphy got her money.
Okay.
And so she, as it happens, here the procedural context, I don't know how important it is, but factually what happens is she goes ahead and reports the full $70,000 award in her income on her 2000 return, and she pays tax on that. Later, she filed an amended return claiming that it was excludable from her income. And I think predictably, as anyone who has listened to me talk about these topics before, and probably most other tax professionals, had she done it differently and maybe not reported it initially, you know, maybe this wouldn't have been a court battle and we wouldn't have this case. But
yeah.
Because she, you know, reported it initially, paid tax, and then filed an amended return asking for a refund, it, in fact, got flagged, the IRS denies the refund, and then she has to sue in district court for a refund.
Okay.
So, I mean, and basically, I mean, in the district court, she's arguing two things. One is her recovery is for personal physical injuries, and therefore it's excludable under Section 104A2. And, Mark, as you said a minute ago, I mean, that's kind of a fundamental code section. I mean, we all know what that says. It's the one exclusion section that in the Internal Revenue Code says that you know, we're not going to tax, you know, even though the Internal Revenue Code is very expansive, that we're not going to tax recoveries for physical injuries or physical sickness. And so, I mean, that's kind of a factual argument. She's saying, well, I had my teeth problems and various other problems, and that is physical, and therefore it's excludable under that Internal Revenue Code section.
Yeah. Now, I'm sorry, let me just interrupt you, because I think the argument that she's making is something that we all see and is something that comes up. And the first thing that jumps into mind is obviously sexual abuse cases.
Yep.
As you know, I mean, this has been a very hot issue because it's been in the news. They've had huge class action and group settlements against, you know, the Catholic Church and certain archdioceses. And many people, as you know, have gone to great lengths to craft the language so that there is some physical personal injury in there so that they can get the tax exclusion. So this is something along those lines where she's gone back to, you know, the teeth grinding and some of the physical manifestations of the stress and trying to get it to fit into that section of 104A2. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right.
Okay. Real quickly, the court that heard this, it's the D.C. Circuit. I'm not really, as you know, I'm not an attorney and I'm not really a court watcher, but that's the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, also known as the Federal Appellate Court. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that is a step below the U.S. Supreme Court, research.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. Yeah, I mean, the way that, and of course, I'm a tax lawyer and not a, although I've done some appellate and tax cases. I'm not an expert on court procedure, but, I mean, yes, it is an important court, an important case, and there are, what is it, I think 13, that is circuits, I believe that's the number, around the U.S. We have circuits in different parts of the country, and, of course, they hear district cases that are appealed from district court cases within their, you know, within their circuit. And so, I mean, they are the appellate courts, and they are one step below the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, and not to inject politics into a dry tax discussion here, but, you know, I was looking at the actual ruling. It was authored by Justice Ginsburg, who is, I believe, the presiding chief judge of the district. Some people may recognize the name, had been appointed by President Reagan to replace Judge Bork back in the 80s and was withdrawn under kind of a cloud of some questions, and was also heard in front of Judge Roberts and Judge Rogers and Judge Brown. So this is hardly a liberal court that heard this, and Would I be correct in stating that, you know, we've kind of talked about the facts and where this is going, but we'll get to what they decided, but this is almost a libertarian type ruling in nature, isn't it? As far as the expansiveness of what the court decided.
Yeah, and I have to say that this case is in so many ways kind of a wake-up call, I think, to a lot of people. People like me, you know, if you'd asked me 2 days ago, what would I think of the chances of a constitutional argument like this winning, you know, I would have been proven very, very wrong. It goes to the very root, I think as you said at the outset, very root of the question of what is income.
Let's get into what the court did find on this, because we've established what she was trying to do and where she was coming with on this, but let's talk a little bit about what her argument was on the constitutional grounds and what the court found.
Yep. Understood. I already mentioned her statutory argument, that is that within the 104 exclusion, her recoveries were physical in nature, and therefore she should win. Her other argument is the constitutional one, that really the 16th Amendment doesn't allow this kind of attack. So I mean that's the crux of the case. That's of course the basis for decision, and it really, as you say, it's an elegant argument. Essentially, her argument is that income, the 16th Amendment, which basically, I had to go back and look at exactly what that says, basically just allows Congress the ability to lay and collect an income tax on income from all sources. It's a very broad and a very short provision. And the question, of course, is, well, gee, what does that mean? Well, her argument in the case, which the district court in the District of Columbia did not buy, but the circuit court, with this, kind of luminary judges, as you just said, Mark, circuit court did buy, and they said, you know what, we agree with you. We don't think that this is income, because looking back at some historical documents, I mean, they really talk about, you know, some legislative history from the teens. Looking at some historical documents, we don't think that people viewed this kind of a recovery for something like, you know, your reputation is not taxable, for heaven's sakes. Therefore, if you have a damaged reputation and you get some money that is to put you back in the position of having a good reputation, that's what the money is for, that should not be taxable either. That is not income. Your wealth has not been increased by that payment. So, I mean, it's almost kind of a metaphysical equation, but they do so state.
Well, it's interesting. I heard a very apt analogy was that if there was a way to perfectly compensate someone for the loss of an arm, and let's say that that was $100,000 and that was perfect compensation, why would the government be allowed to take your hand? Because all it is doing is making you whole. It's not a gain. It's not anything. It's the return of your capital. It's a return of your being. And I think you're right. It is sort of a metaphysical type argument. And I think that's what caught everyone so off guard, is that we're so used to arguing minutiae and detail and precedent, that we sometimes are taken aback when somebody comes in and steps back and sees a huge picture like this and makes a sweeping ruling.
Yep. I think you're absolutely right.
Well, let's kind of get to what the court found, and we'll kind of wrap up this first segment, take a little break, and then start our second segment, which will be sort of on the fallout and where we think this is going. The court essentially obviously agreed with her, which is pretty astonishing. Did they agree with her on both arguments? You mentioned that one was about the physical injury classification, the other was the 16th Amendment. What did they find on that?
Thanks. They don't agree with her on both, and I think that's a really significant thing, too. They on the statutory argument, that is the argument that Section 104, as it's written, allows her to exclude this recovery, they say, well, no, that doesn't work. And they base that on the fact that even though I think they implicitly buy the notion that if you have loose teeth and damaged teeth and all that as a result of stress, that is physical. But they basically, and I think, by the way, that's, I think if there's a sleeper part of this case, I believe that's it. I believe when we get to drawing some conclusions here, one of mine certainly is the statutory 104 argument, which I've been talking about for some years now, I think is a lot better as a result of this case, even though this wasn't the basis of decision. But they reject her exclusion on that statutory ground, and they say, and I think this is really significant, they say that they go back to the award. Now, bear in mind, this case didn't settle. It was actually the result of this, you know, administrative ruling, like a court award. And they said, well, your court award says you got the money for emotional distress. It doesn't say we're giving you the money for your bruxism or teeth injuries or something of that sort. I think that's huge. And it, to me, it means had that award said you're getting the money for bruxism or for physical injury or something like that, I believe that they would have come out differently on the statutory argument. And again, I think what that means is, and as we all know, the vast majority of cases do not go to a ruling, whether administrative or court. The vast majority of cases are settled. And I think an awful lot of people out there, plaintiffs' lawyers especially, are going to be more careful now to say exactly what the recovery is and to use the, you know, in appropriate cases, to use the physical injury kind of language.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, as a professional, I'm always astonished by some of the documents that I see come across my desk. And again, I'm not an attorney, but how carelessly some of them are because they don't mention the physical. It's sloppy, and boy, it can really come back to haunt people, but I think you're exactly right. Well, Rob, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, what I'd like to do is talk with you about what you think the implications of this ruling are, where you see things going from here, the impact on a couple of different constituencies. So sit tight. We'll be back with part two of our interview with attorney Rob Wood. And this is Mark Wahlstrom, and you are listening to The Settlement Channel.